Corcoran, again, from Twin Eagles Wilderness School, and just want to welcome you here to the call. A little new here to the Maestro interface, so I just want to check in to see that everyone can hear me. So if you can hear me, please press the 1 on your phone right now. Great, yeah, if you can hear me, just press the 1 on your phone right now. Awesome. Great. Okay, that's everybody. Thank you. Just wanted to make sure that that we're rolling here and that you can hear me. So yes, welcome. Welcome to today's call, Deep Nature Connection. And really excited to be on the call here with you today. Again, my name is Tim Corcoran. I'm one of the founders and directors of Twin Eagles Wilderness School, along with my beautiful wife, Janine Tidwell. And yeah, really excited for today's call. We've had a great turnout. We've got over 40 people registered for the call, which is really exciting. And yeah, just stoked to share a little bit today. It's one of the things we've been working on is developing more avenues for people to share with people about what we're up to here. So yeah, just really want to welcome everyone here. Couple of quick notes. First is, with the Maestro conference technology that we're using, if for any reason you get dropped from the call, I just ask you to hang up, wait a moment, and then call right back in on the same information that you used to call in the first place. That shouldn't happen, but just in case it does, you can just follow that protocol and all should be well. Okay, and then as well, we're going to have a power pack call with lots to share here today. So if you'd like to, feel free to grab a notebook and pen or even a laptop to take a few notes. You may want to have that. Okay, so yeah, getting started here. We always start with gratitude and thanksgiving here at Twin Eagles. It's one of our practices as an organization and as a community, as a school, that gosh, we've been doing a long time. I first learned about this from Jake Swamp back in, I guess it was the year 2000, and he came out to, back when he was still alive, Jake Swamp was a sub-chief of the Mohawk clan of the Iroquois Confederacy in what's now New York State, and he was an advocate for world peace. He spoke at the United Nations and founded the Tree of Peace Society that planted trees in the name of peace all around the world. They planted over 5 million trees, really, really inspirational work that Jake did. And he taught us about the Thanksgiving Address, which was a traditional teaching that came from the Haudenosaunee people. And the basic idea was, actually it was really cool because their traditional word for it directly translated to the words that come before all else. The words that come before all else. And so that's the idea, right, that before we do something important, it's good for us to bring our hearts and minds together with gratitude. So I just want to invite us into that space right now. And I know we're on the telephone here, or maybe some of you are dialing in through Skype or in other means through the computer. But wherever you're at, maybe inside or maybe sitting down or maybe outside, I just invite you to still yourself for a moment, and as I do the same. And yeah, I invite you to take a deep breath with me here. Deep breath again. And just for a moment, just to tune in with your senses and notice what is it that you're hearing besides me. What is it that you're smelling? What is it that you're tasting? What is it that you're feeling? What is it that you're seeing? And also tune into the heart. How is your heart feeling? And for me, looking in that heart space, what I'm feeling a ton of gratitude for right now is just this autumn season. Gosh, I'm looking out my office window and seeing a beautiful landscape covered in leaves from the western paper birch. various shades of yellow and almost orange, almost red even, some of them. And it's just beautiful. And with the dappled sunlight coming through the western hemlock trees and slight little breeze, I've got a bunch of ladybugs in the corner of my window. And everything is moving towards, through the fall here, towards winter. And so I'm just feeling grateful for this autumn season. And yeah, wonder if you'd join me in that. If you can also find gratitude for the autumn, go ahead again and just press the one button if you're feeling gratitude yourself for the autumn. Great, 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 great. Awesome. That's actually everyone on the call. Wow, that's really cool. So because we have a lot of folks on the call, I'm not going to have everyone share, but I just invite you to identify one thing, one simple thing that you're grateful for in your life right now and here in the present moment, and just to presence that in your mind's eye or perhaps out loud if you feel comfortable doing that. And so it's in this place of gratitude that we can find a sense of connection and a sense of unity. Wow, you know, we're each able to feel our hearts and able to connect with something in the world and appreciate that. That's no small task. And how cool that we can all do that here in the same moment. So in that way, it brings us together. And as Jake Swamp would have said long ago, our hearts and minds are one. And so our intentions for the call today are to, yes, connect and share about the journey of deep nature connection and mentoring. I've got some stories and teachings that I've been sitting with lately that I'm excited to share with you, and also share a little bit about our upcoming program. We have a new program called our Deep Nature Connection Weekend Series. That's a series of nine weekends, one a month from starting this month, October, this month, October 2015, through this coming June 2016. So we'll be sharing a little bit about that program and offering a special discount for anyone who's interested. And then we'll have time for some questions and answers. Our intention is to be complete by 4 o'clock, so it's a one-hour call. Okay, well, so getting started then. We've been doing this for 15 years. We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary. We had a big turnout of close to 100 people up at a location that we have been going to for summer camps for years called Medicine Circle. And we had close to 100 people come out. And it was almost hard to believe, gosh, it's been 10 years that we've been doing this work here in Sandpoint at Twin Eagles Wilderness School. And prior to that, Janine and I spent 5 years with a wilderness school back in Brattleboro, Vermont, where we really learned and developed proficiency and mastery of the skills that we now teach. And so there's so much to share. And it's always such a hard thing. Gosh, I mean, sharing teachings on the journey of deep nature connection, it could be a million different things more. So for me, what I've tuned into has been around a practice that I've taken on in recent years. And so the teaching, it's kind of a new frame on an old teaching. So it's what I'm calling becoming the hunter. And I want to say right away, I'm not necessarily talking about hunting animals. It's through my own hunting practice that I've connected in a deeper way to this teaching, though. And so I'm using that as part of the name. So, yeah, becoming the hunter. And so what do I mean by that, becoming the hunter? Well, the thing that we're hunting could be anything. It certainly could be a deer, say, or an elk. It could also be maybe some wild edible plants to supplement or to be your dinner. It could be a handrail stalk that you're searching for, that you're hunting for, to learn to make fire with. Maybe it's a beautiful feather that you're searching for to make artwork. It could be a variety of things. And when we, but what I'm talking about is a journey a journey of setting, I don't quite want to say a goal, because it's bigger than having a goal. It's really creating a powerful need to move towards something, to move towards a deeper connection. And it's when we do that, when we put ourselves on that journey of finding something to hunt in that way, we put ourselves on a pathway, a powerful pathway of connection. And so I've got some stories to illustrate this and some ideas to help flesh this out. So as I said, these recent years, past 3 years for me, I've taken on an annual practice of hunting deer. And it's something that I've always felt a connection towards, but I haven't really taken on as a heartfelt practice, as in, this is something I'm going to do no matter what. Haven't taken it on until these last few years. And as I've done that, I've had some really strong insights about what happens to us in that context. For me, hunting has always been, actual hunting deer has been something that I've really held out as a really special thing. And I have such a sensitivity and a love for the animals of our world and for deer. It was something I just held up there in high regard, this idea of hunting. And I wanted to wait until I really felt like I was ready for that. And so a lot of years on this journey of deep nature connection passed before I really took that on. And as I did in the recent years, I was astonished, at the time, like 12, 13 years into the journey, I was astonished by, on a physical level, how much more quiet and more aware I became when I was in the context of hunting for deer. I mean, I teach this stuff, I practice this stuff, I live this stuff. Fox walk and owl eyes, maybe some of you are familiar with, but practices of quieting down, slowing down, and opening up our awareness. And I've had powerful encounters with animals, not trying to hunt them, but just connecting with them because of this. And yet when I went out with this intention to feed my family and my community with wild meat that I've made a personal connection with, I found myself getting so much more quiet and so much more aware. It was like it just skyrocketed. It wasn't even like, a small percentage. It was like 2-3 times as much. It was just staggering to me to experience that. And it reminded me of something that one of my teachers long ago had said, right, that the greater the need, the greater the result. That when we have a real need in front of us, that we call forth all manner of inner resources to rise up and meet that need. And there are so many examples of that. And I was just, for me, this is just one. And again, it may be hunting deer, it may be finding plants, it could be anything. But for me, this just happened to be my example that was the inspiration for me to bring this teaching forward here today. And because when we look back at our ancestors, when we look back at our ancestors who lived close to the earth, right, we can track back all of our ancestry to a common place and find that all of our ancestors at one time lived close to the earth. And there are many stories of seemingly like superhuman feats of awareness that they were capable of. And how did they do that? I mean, stories like, how did the scouts of old, how were they able to walk up to a fire pit and be able to read what kind of fire was burned, right? This is like the old fire where they're just looking at the coals and no one's there anymore. They would walk up to the stories of them walking up to an old fire pit and determining what kind of firewood was burned. How did the fire get lit? Was it by matches? Was it by bow and drill? Was it by hand drill? Stories of them being able to assess how long did the fire burn, what species of wood, all these things, right? Or other stories of the scouts of old being able to walk silently through a bed of dry leaves without making a sound. Or the classic stories from the Indian War, stories of Geronimo and his band of, just like 15 or 20 Apaches evading the U.S. cavalry, despite the fact that the cavalry had hundreds and hundreds of troops, and they had horses, and they had provisions, and food, and water, and all this stuff. And here were the Apache just on their feet, totally avoiding them, right? How were they capable of these things? How were the trackers able to read the presence of people and animals in the forest without perceiving them directly, but by reading the concentric rings and understanding bird language and the language of the forest? How were the trackers able to develop almost extrasensory perception capabilities of communication with the animals that people would chalk up today as, you know, either just a myth that didn't really happen, or some freak accident? And yet in our time, working with Native teachers and elders through the years, these stories rise up again and again and again, these stories of deep connection that seem to have been almost like a birthright for human beings. And it's these qualities that I see so many people, including myself, yearn for so much, the yearning for this deep connection. How were they capable of these things? Well, one piece of the answer that I've tapped into has to do with this idea of becoming the hunter, that all of our Earth-based ancestors had an integrated practice of deep nature connection that was integrated into their very culture and into their very communities. I've had the honor and the blessing of spending some extended time with a few different Native communities here in what's now the United States, here in North America. In my early 20s, I spent a few years with the Navajo people down in northeast Arizona. And when I first got on the journey of becoming a Nature Connection mentor, I spent a lot of years, Ginny and I spent 7 years, working closely with Gilbert Walking Bull, who was a traditional holy man with the Lakota people. And we spent quite a bit of time there at his camp, the Tatankamani camp, in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And in more recent years, the last, I don't know, 5-7 years, I've spent a lot of time integrating with the Spokane tribe and one family in particular, the Moses family, including my good friend Barry Moses from the Spokane tribe of Indians. And one of the things I've noticed across culture, across these indigenous cultures, is that they still had an ethic of deep nature connection built into the community. And so what I mean by that is this idea of becoming the hunter really was embedded in their culture through different practices, right? So take, for example, a couple different examples. One, we could look at the Spokane people and their reservation just north of Spokane, Washington. And they have an annual ceremony every midwinter, so like February, each year, that's an elaborate ceremony of renewal for the people, where the whole community gets together, and they, in one of the hardest times of year, they bring themselves together and celebrate for multiple days. And it serves a lot of functions. One of the biggest ones, though, is renewal, and it's a time for multi-generations to come together, for the teachings to be shared, for stories to be shared, for ceremonies, for healings, for laughter, for fun, and just plain connection. And one of the elements they have in place is that they have a feast of their traditional wild native foods. So talking about foods like venison from the deer, and salmon, and the wild berries like huckleberries and sarvis berries, the wild roots like brown camas and white camas and bitterroots. And it's amazing to spend time there and to see this huge array of traditional wild native foods come out there in the middle of winter, right? Like, this is the hardest time of year to get these things. And yet this is an essential part of their community. This happens each and every year. This needs to happen. It renews the bonds of connection from people to nature, from people to each other, and from people to themselves. And so in order to prepare for this, they're thinking about this all year long. And I've spent some time with my friend Barry in helping to harvest some of these foods, right? And so, you know, it might start in, you know, mid-late June when the camas roots are ready to dig. And they're watching the weather, they're watching the plants. And when that time comes, and each species has its own various indicators, but when that time comes, the people have to put down whatever it is they're doing and go and make the harvest happen, right? The people have to put down whatever they're doing and follow nature's lead and make the harvest happen. And this is happening all year round. Like, well, someone's got to get the camas now. Oh, now it's time for the bitter roots. Now it's time for the huckleberries. Now the service berries are ripe. And now it's time to hunt the deer. Now it's time to go fishing, right? And so integrated in the culture then is a strong need for the people to have these foods. Now, at first, I'll be honest, I kind of thought, oh, God, it's so romantic and so cool, and like, oh, my gosh, you know, and I was really honored to be invited and everything. But, you know, the reality is, if you've ever spent time harvesting wild foods, it's a lot of work. And if this is happening, like, you know, constantly through the kind of late spring to early fall months, you know, I mean, life's happening, and it's hard to put all those things down. And yet, that's what these people do, right? So that they have this huge abundance come February to feed the people. And so we see then that this value of nature connection and this structure is built into the community. And so who's going to go out this year? Oh, you know, maybe a young 12-year-old girl is now ready to start harvesting alongside her older sisters or mother or aunties or grandmother. And slowly, you know, that gets built back up in the community. Another, and so harvesting is the round one. Round two, the foods are cooked and potentially preserved, right, as the people come together again. And they can't do it, and you know, they have to do it in the old way. The old way is the best way to do that. So if it's the camas roots, they're cooking in a pit oven where they're digging a big giant pit and burying the roots, you know, in a protected way down in the ground, and then covering that with red hot fire or red hot rocks that then cooks it over time, and the community gathers again during that time, and as the roots are cooked, and it takes 2-3 days, and then, you know, round three is it comes and it's preserved, and then it's brought back out for round three, at the big dance, at the big ceremony, there in February, and again it's those bonds of connection that are renewed, bonds of people to place, people to nature, people to each other, people to themselves. Another example of this was years ago with Gilbert Walking Bull. He would come and visit us back in Vermont and share traditional teachings. And one of the practices that he worked with was a ceremonial practice with what most people would know as the peace pipe. He called it the Chinupa Wakan, the sacred pipe. And there was a certain blend of common plants that was harvested and then smoked in there, including bearberry or kinnikinnick, osha root, and another one that he called chinchasha. And this was amazing to me because chinchasha, that's what it translates to for us, is that's what most of us would call red osier dogwood. Some people call it red willow. And so again, the structure in the culture and the community was this pipe is a sacred part of our spiritual practice. And in order for this to be effective, we need to be providing, you know, it's not just going to the store and buying something. We need to be in direct relationship and harvest these plants that will go into that pipe. And so it was the world of the Lakota that, you know, that we stepped into all those years ago as we discover, what does it mean to get chinchasha? Oh, it's the inner bark of the red osier dogwood. Inner bark, what is inner bark? Like, there's bark and there's wood, but what the heck is inner bark? And, oh, okay, it's this layer in between. Oh, okay, cambium, some people call it. And, And then what is red osier dogwood? Well, it's kind of like a willow, and it grows in the wet areas, not in the dry areas, down low, not up high. And, okay, and it's kind of red, but there's another one looks kind of like it. That one's kind of dark orange, so you got to be really careful not to get those mixed up. Okay, how do I tell the difference? Well, the chinchasha is opposite branching, not alternate branching, and it's got these little little bumps on the bark of the twigs that are more than a year old. And so this whole world now opening up, connecting with nature, connecting with this plant, connecting with the landscape, learning where it grows, learning where it doesn't grow. And then, oh, well, you have to get the young shoots to harvest this stuff properly, because if you get the older shoots, they've got those bumps. And if you try and scrape off the bark on those bumps, you won't be able to get it. So it's only the young shoots that don't have those little bumps that are going to be easy to get the outer bark removed, and then you'll be able to scrape off the inner bark, which is the part you want. And, of course, we would go to great efforts and work with the kids at the nature program that we were facilitating back then and work with them, and we'd all go harvest this together and take this journey of nature connection and, you know, have fun and laugh and celebrate and feel so proud of our accomplishments. We'd spend hours and hours, you know, gathering up these tiny little bundles of chinchasha, you know, and then Gilbert would come, and it was the elder coming, and it was a big moment, and he would travel out from South Dakota and visit our community, and we'd present him with these gifts, you know, and he'd be so happy, and a big smile would come over his face, and I can just remember his wrinkled face just lighting up, and then the stories would come out of when he was a boy, and he would get this for his grandparents, you know, who taught him the spiritual ways of his people, and it was just like liquid gold coming out of this man's mouth. I always used to think, why aren't there like 10,000 people here? You know, why isn't it, you know, and I was just like blown away by this and just like soaking it all in. But there again, you know, we see the value of nature connection integrated into the culture, right? Become the hunter. In this case, what were we hunting? We were hunting the chinchasha, right? And with that need, we showed up. We did it. We did the hard work, you know? So the same idea there is with the Spokane here happening with Gilbert and with the Lakota people. And so these are just two short stories, small examples of what happens when we integrate this value, this idea of becoming the hunter. And so then, you know, there's that question, well, so what do I do with that? How does that impact me here today, 2015, you know? So there we go, right? So then that's the question. What is it that you're hunting? What is it that you're yearning for, that you strive for? And how can that tie in with nature in a way that can facilitate that sense of connection that we value so much and that brings so much meaning, right? Maybe for someone it's, I want to have medicine in my medicine cabinet that I made. I want to have a relationship with those plants, right? Maybe for someone else it's, I want there to be food. I want there to be wild greens on my salad at least once a week that I serve to my family. Awesome. Maybe for someone else it's, I want to make that bow that I'm going to go hunting with. Beautiful, right? There's so many examples. Maybe for someone else it's, I want to make my fires by rubbing sticks together in the old way, fire by friction, to light my fire each day this winter. That was one that Janine and I, all these are actually ones Janine and I have taken on through the years. And then it becomes something more than a goal. It becomes a driving passion that takes on a greater power than just a simple goal, that takes us on and sweeps us away on a journey of deep nature connection that ultimately facilitates us into that sense of connection and meaning that we're yearning for. One last, oh gosh, I got to make this quick. We're already half past the hour. One last current example is with my oldest son, River. And River's 9 years old, and he's been around, of course, Twin Eagles since the beginning, since we started the school before he was born. And, you know, he's been around people doing bow drill fires forever. Well, he's a fiery boy, and he loves fire, much like his father. And he's been working on making fire with the bow and drill kit for a long time, actually. I actually had him spinning on his first Bodril when he was still 1 year old. Well, now I've worked with a lot of folks on making fire by friction. And what I see, you know, for kids, if they're exposed to it and they're inspired and they're practicing, they're usually about 12 years old when they get their first fire, just because their bodies have to, you know, there's a certain technique for one that they need to have a certain amount of focus and competence for, and then, you know, there is a certain amount of strength that's necessary in order to make it happen. Well, I knew that River would probably do this a little earlier than most, since he's been exposed to so much inspiration on this fire-making front. And in recent months, he's made a lot of progress, and I've really watched him, and I've been like, wow, he's, like, so close. You know, he's so close to getting this fire. He just needs a little bit more motivation. And so I've kind of been waiting and watching, when is this going to happen? When's it going to happen? And so recently, in the last week, we were at a primitive skills gathering up in North Central Washington. And there was other families there and other kids. And a lot of the other kids had larger knives than he did. He's got a knife, but it was a little bit smaller. It's one that I made for him. It was his first and only knife that he's got. And so he came to me, and he's like, Dad, you know, I really want a new knife, and all these other kids have bigger knives than me, da-da-da. I was like, okay, you know, I could take this in a couple different directions. There's the non-attachment side and non-comparison side, and that's great. And I did some of that work. But as I also looked at it just from a practical perspective, I realized, oh, you know, he's got a point. Like, he actually is starting to outgrow his current knife, and he could use something a little larger. So I'm like, okay, yeah, that would be a nice gift to get for him. But now how do I set this up, right? Do I just give it to him? Do I don't know, make him do some chores and earn some money, and then he's got to buy it? Well, what if I could embrace the teaching of Become the Hunter in here and provide an opportunity for this to be a further journey of his nature connection? So that's what I opted to do. And what I told him was, I said, look, River, you've been saying you want this knife, right? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, if you get your first fire on the bow and drill, I'll get you a new larger knife. He's like, what, really? Like, I don't do these things very often, so when they happen, I've got his attention big time. So he's all excited. He's telling his little brother. He's telling his friend, oh, my God, I'm going to get a new knife. He's getting all amped up. And, you know, for the last week, he's just been, you know, focused and working on that bow and drill, and especially actually just the last couple of days. And so there we were. It was actually just yesterday. And we had finished breakfast, and no, we were actually in between. Janine was cooking, and we were having waffles, and we were in between waffles. You know, that little moment. So, well, I've got like 20 seconds between this waffle and the next, so I'm going to go practice my bow drill. And he races off and grabs his kit, and he's twirling away. And oh my gosh, what do you know? Sure enough, he gets a coal, and he just freaks out. I mean, he's just jumping for joy and yelling and screaming and just, you know, beside himself with excitement. And, you know, I noticed, and so, you know, he went and blew the tinder bundle into flame and the whole bit, and we celebrated with him around that fire. And it was a special moment. And I noticed, though, that, you know, with that teaching present, in this case of, yeah, becoming the hunter, that there was this greater yearning. He already had a huge yearning, certainly, to make fire, but there was something even bigger there for him. And yeah, it was the knife. But beyond that, you know, it was that passion, that fire inside of him, that fire in his heart that was, it's like it was released and allowed an opportunity and an avenue to express itself. And then, you know, wow, he found the focus, he found the drive, he found the strength, he found the endurance to muster up the energy to make that fire. So that's one last example. Become the hunter. That's one, my first teaching that I've got for you here. And oh my gosh, time is just flying by. It's 3:40. I do have one, let's see if I can squeeze this in. I got one more thing I want to share with you. It'll make for things to be a little tight, but I definitely want to share this. One of the other dynamics I found last week at the Primitive Skills Gathering that we were at was I had a lot of people approach me asking me for tips and advice on this or that or whatnot. And a common theme that emerged was, Tim, I'm yearning for connection, and I feel it in little bits and pieces when I'm, you know, whatever, making, you know, stretching this deer hide or weaving this basket. But how do I really become connected? Like, I sense that there's something greater. And how do I do that? And so it was a great opportunity for me to kind of like, wow, look back and just kind of distill things down to the basics. And like, okay, yeah, if I push away all the fluff and I set that aside or whatever, like, what does it really come down to, this journey of connection? And I can see the people who've made it. I can see the people who've tried and haven't made it as much. I can see those differences. What does the essence come down to? And so I shared with that individual my reflections, and then yesterday I was sitting down organizing my thoughts, and I brought it down to 7 core elements I'd like to share with you here today. And I just call it, you know, we could call it for short, 7 steps to becoming deeply connected. And who knows, I might, you know, turn that into an ebook or an article online or something. But this is really the essentials of what I've seen through 15 years of what it takes for someone to successfully make this journey. And again, we're running out of time. I've got so much to share, so little time. So I'm going to kind of go through this quickly, but hopefully not too quick. So number one is what I'm going to call become a backyard naturalist, right? Make a connection with the nature immediately in your area and your bioregion. There's so much focus on globalism and, you know, the polar bears and this, that, and that's all super important. But the species that will take you on a journey of connection will be those that are right in front of you. So first and foremost, become that backyard naturalist. You know, connect with the essence of life that's present in every living thing, right out our back doors, everything, from the rocks to the lichens to the deer to the mice to the Cooper's hawks to the cedar trees to the yew trees to the ornamental Norway maples growing in our suburban backyards, whatever it is, it's nature. It has the essence of life in it and has something to teach us. So connect with that just for the sake of connection, right? That's number one. Number two, find a mentor, right? Find a mentor. The simple truth is, and I've seen this so many times for kids, for teens, for young adults, for older adults, we as people are so much more capable than we realize. And a good mentor will see your potential and take you further than you can go on your own. There is nothing more powerful than a mentor. I mean, there's so much inner work we can do to kind of drop the limiting beliefs and all that, which is great stuff. And God, God knows, I love that work. And one way to really fast forward our growth is not that it's a race, but one way to grow is to find that mentor. And those that do, you know, because we're a social creature. We're meant to work together. We're not meant to lone wolf this thing. The Hopis have said that, right? The time of the lone wolf is over. We're meant to work together. So find a mentor. 3 is diversify your nature connection. Recognize that all things in nature have something to teach and that you will likely be drawn towards one or another or maybe a few, and there may be some areas of nature connection that you even find yourself resisting. This is the journey I see most people take, right? So when we look around the wheel and we look at the different avenues of connecting deeply, there's the naturalist skills we've already talked about. There's wildlife tracking, right? There is the edible medicinal plants. There's survival skills and primitive living skills. There's awareness skills like bird language and the language of learning the language of the forest. Most people will connect with some of those and kind of be naturally drawn to some, but they'll have a certain resistance to others. And what I always encourage beginners on is diversify and develop some basic proficiency in all these areas. What I want to offer is that our earth-based ancestors, these were basic living skills for our earth-based ancestors that literally we evolved with as a species. So they have something to offer every one of us. So we always, whenever we're working with someone in a long-term setting, we really encourage them to develop in a diverse way because each one of those will activate and call forth unique qualities within you as a learner that will develop you holistically. And after you've developed some basic proficiency around the wheel in the full spectrum of nature connection, then it's a good time to start to focus in and develop a particular area of passion or mastery. So diversify your nature connection. 4, track yourself, right? Inner tracking. Realize that in this journey of opening up our connection and awareness to nature, there's a natural organic response that equates to awareness of self opening up. That's only natural. We can't help but to do that. I've never seen someone connect deeply with nature and not connect with themselves. And so within that, it's, again, the mentor is so important. Find someone who you trust, you know, who's got some familiarity with spiritual development, with emotional maturity, with nature connection, who won't stand for your limiting beliefs that you may have for yourself and holds a higher bar for you, and that can help you move through the things that hold you back. There's a lot to say on that front. One of the other phrases a good friend of mine, Mark Tollefson, likes to share is, when we track alone, we're always right. And so he's talking about wildlife tracking. If I come up to a set of tracks and I'm alone on the riverbank, oh, it's a raccoon. Well, then it's a raccoon. You know, whether it is or not, if I'm the only one there, then, well, it is. But if someone else is there, perhaps with more experience than me, they may point out, oh, Tim, did you notice the way the foot morphology is? Did you notice the position of those toes? Did you notice the position of the gait? Raccoons don't walk that way. Their feet don't quite look like that. Take a look again, and I look again, and I see what I didn't see before. Oh, look at that. There's little webs between the toes. Oh, my gosh, look at the gait. It's loping. Wow, that's actually a river otter that I thought was a raccoon. Oh. And the inner journey is like that. We come to conclusions about ourselves, oftentimes that limit ourselves, and believe them and lock in. And we know we're right. And I can only say this because I do it. And yet, with an experienced mentor there, they can help broaden our perspective and help us see what we didn't see before, and help open us up to our great potential. So track yourself, 4. 5, mentor others. Don't wait too long to start passing on what you know to others. When we mentor others, it asks us to draw out our greatness, right? To be that role model for someone else. It asks us to look at things and understand what we think we know in a way, in a deeper way, in order to pass it on to someone else. You know, a very, very strong way to make the connection. That's 5. 6 is find a deep nature connection, mentoring community. You know, again, we're social creatures meant to do this work together. It's how we always have. It's our Western culture that has largely fragmented that. But people feel this and people yearn for this. And so imagine having a community where, oh my gosh, you know, where there's kids and teens and younger people that want to learn from you, that look up to you, that know that you're a role model and you have that responsibility because you know the younger ones are modeling after you. You know, then we act differently, you know, big time. Families that you can connect with and even adopt who share your passions and can help you celebrate your accomplishments, right? And that sense of love and family that's so dear to our hearts and so needed. Peers who you can share your journey with day in and day out over the long haul, and mentors and elders a few steps or maybe many steps past down the path than you are, who can help you learn. Having that full spectrum of community is so important in making the connection. And then lastly, develop yourself spiritually, right? To connect our passion to a deeper quality of willingness and surrender and acceptance of life as it is, to release our resistance and find that spiritual practice that brings us back to who we are, brings us back to the present moment, and connects us with that quietness inside ourselves. And it's from that place, you know, Gilbert Walking Bull, my elder, used to call that, and his word for the quiet mind was wo-wak-waka. And he would say that is one of the greatest achievements we can make as human beings, is connecting with that. And when we connect with that quietness, it opens us up to a whole world of possibility, what we call intuition and the synchronicities, and ultimately our purpose in life, our vision. So those seven, I know I'm going through those really fast, so I apologize, but just, yeah, again, to recap. One, become the backyard naturalist. Two, find a mentor. Three, diversify your nature connection. Four, track yourself. Five, mentor others. Six, find a deep nature connection, mentoring community. And seven is develop yourself spiritually. So the time is just moving on very fast here, and I promised I would share a little bit about our upcoming program, the Deep Nature Connection Weekend Series. So I want to go ahead and just jump right into that. We've got just a few minutes left here. I'm going to still try and wrap this up at the top of the hour here. So again, just to recap, I'm guessing you've probably seen our announcement about this, but this is a new program we're offering this year. It's our Deep Nature Connection Weekend Series for adults. It's a series of 9 weekends, actually 8 weekends and one long weekend, starting this month, October 2015, through May of 2016. And the topics include the full range of what we offer at Twin Eagles. For that reason that I just mentioned of diversify your nature experience, so we can take participants through the full journey. So we're covering primitive wilderness survival skills, wildlife tracking, wild edible medicinal plants, nature-based mentoring, the naturalist training, bird language and advanced awareness. We're covering inner tracking. We've even got a snow cave expedition in the middle of winter, which is a super fun weekend, and then a final challenge at the end of it to wrap it up. And so in this way, the weekends come together and build on each other to develop a really synergistic quality, all, you know, with a group of peers, all with a group of mentors, all inside of a container of community, you know, in a context of mentoring, in a context of inner tracking that can support a deep journey that's different from someone going out and piecing those together at a workshop here or, you know, a gathering there. There's a difference there. Again, you know, with the mentoring, we have myself and my wife, Janine Tidwell, and our good friend Barry Moses are some of the primary mentors that are going to be facilitating at this. We've got years and years, you know, each of us 15-plus years of experience now, mentoring others on this journey and helping people through the blocks that come up because we're human beings. Not because there's anything wrong with us, but because that's what happens when blocks come up. We're caring, good-hearted people that really want to make a difference and do that in just each of our, we do our best to do that in each of our actions day in and day out. We've got a whole community up here that's been developed, and, you know, imagine coming back from the snow cave expedition and not just, you know, having a debrief process as we look back at what we learned, but imagine having a community of elders who are themselves practiced in the journey of deep nature connection that we bring the story back to and getting their reflections, right? Imagine our deeper patterns, you know, our hearts, you know, being engaged through the journey, through inner tracking, and the whole thing happening in Sandpoint, Idaho, like, my God, like one of the most beautiful places ever. I love Sandpoint so much. The big lake, the mountains, such a diverse ecology here. The land has so much to offer here. So I'm just going through this really fast because we're running out of time. But a couple other points just to put out there about the program. We've really designed this as a great way for folks who, you know, work during the week or have, you know, significant responsibilities to fit this into their lives, to develop this deep relationship with nature and resilient community connections and a depth of self-awareness that will really lead towards realizing our potential as human beings. That's why we do this work. That's because it's brought me that, and it's brought Janine that, it's brought that to Barry, and we've seen it bring that to so many others, and we so yearn to see more of that in the world. this is like a mini wilderness immersion program. Maybe some of you are familiar with our 9-month-long, 3-day-a-week wilderness immersion program that we've been doing for a few years now. We've designed this as like a mini version of that, that makes it a lot more accessible, certainly, you know, less expensive, and less of a commitment, but yet remains true to the essence of that journey. We've done everything we can do to make this as accessible as possible, putting it on weekends. We've brought the price down as much as we can to start with. We do have further scholarships available from folks that have want to support this community and support people on the journey of deep nature connection. So some of those are available. We have a monthly payment plan and a special discount that I'm just about to share with you. And then lastly, it's important for me to say this will most likely be offered this year only. We've got other things we're going to be focusing on next year. We have actually done this program once before. For any of you who know Graham McLaren, who himself walks with a deep level of nature connection, when he did our program, it was in this format that he first started with. So it's rare for us to do this, but we are bringing it out this year, and I just want folks to know. I've had some folks say, oh, well, maybe I'll do it next year, and I'm like, well, we probably won't just be offering this year only. So just a few minutes left here. We do have a special discount that we would like to offer. And so for anyone who's enrolling in the program this week, from basically right now until this coming Friday at midnight, we're offering just a straight 10% off. So they'll save you a few $100, which should help things out. And that's our way of just saying thank you. There is a code if you'd like to do that, and the code is 10DNCWS10. So again, that 10% discount code is 10DNCWS10. Now, we're actually going to give you some choices. You could take the 10% discount. I'm starting to feel like, who's that guy on The Price is Right? you've got some choices, though. So you could take the 10% discount off. Alternatively, not both, but alternatively, we're offering 3 complimentary 1-hour-long one-on-one mentoring sessions with either myself or Janine as your in place of this discount. So if you want to just pay the full amount, we'll toss in 3 one-hour-long one-on-one consultations, one-on-one mentoring sessions with Janine or I that can be used any time during the year. And then lastly, if you don't want to choose either of those, we would offer that same 10%, which works out to, I think, $225. You can choose to take that and give it back to the scholarship fund here at Twin Eagles. Some folks, you know, who have worked with us have asked for that to be a possibility, right? Which I really like because it helps bring the focus back to the community. So any one of those options, either 10% off, 3 one-hour-long one-on-one mentoring sessions, or that 10% back to the Twin Eagles Scholarship Fund to help someone else. Okay, so I did promise, too, that we'd have time for questions and answers. We don't have a lot of time. We're pretty much right at 4, but for anyone who wants to stick with us, if you need to go, thank you for joining us, and we will see you later. But for anyone who wants to spend just a couple extra minutes, I will open the line up to questions and answers, and anything you've got is fair game. If you've got a question, just push the number 1 on your phone, and I should be able to see it, and then I'll put you on the mic, and you can ask your question. So again, if you've got a question, just press the number 1, and we can spend some time with that. And I did have some questions come in earlier. One was, what happens between the weekends beyond just, you know, going home? And so what we're encouraging is we're going to, have practices that we offer you during each weekend that you can take back home with you and put into practice in between the weekends. And that'll be each time we'll have a new set of practices. And two, we're going to create a buddy system where you're each going to be partnered up with someone. And we're encouraging folks to do calls weekly. And that's a really important opportunity to, you know, have these calls and have this connection. It's a chance to have an accountability partner who's helping hold you accountable and just checking in. Hey, did you follow through with what you said you wanted to follow through on? It's an opportunity to share successes, share challenges, and being witnessed, and a chance to witness someone else's journey. And then another question we have here that came in is, can you tell us more about the facilitators and who's facilitating what? So again, yeah, having done this work for 15 years, I feel really blessed to, you know, be leading the organization alongside Janine with such, you know, a robust staff. You know, for me, I'll be holding the program director role on this program. So I'll be particularly present on the opening and closing weekends. And then from there, we're really going with staff specialties. So a huge passion and an area of expertise for myself is survival and the primitive skills. I'll be leading that weekend as well. Wildlife tracking, I'll be leading that one. And the snow cave expedition, I'll be leading. For Janine, she's very experienced with the plant work, with the edibles and the medicinals and ethnobotany. So she'll be leading our plant weekend. And then as well, she's just a tremendous, tremendous gift when it comes to mentoring others in the journey of mentoring. So she'll be leading our Introduction to the Art of Mentoring weekend. And then, of course, our dear friend Barry Moses from the Spokane Tribe just has such gifts to offer, particularly on the front of human potential, emotional maturity, consciousness, and, yeah, just the spiritual journey in general. So he will be leading our inner tracking weekend. And we'll also potentially have other assistant instructors, depending on how things work out, and possibly apprentices who will be helping out. And we may even have other special guest instructors who will be coming to join us. So there you have it. Again, just want to say thanks so much to everyone for joining us. It's a real pleasure, and as you can see, I just love this work and love sharing about it. So please stay in touch, and if you've got any other questions that come up, feel free to shoot us an email. We're happy to give us a call. Happy to help out with any questions you might have. And yeah, thanks again so much for joining us. We'll go ahead and separate our hearts and minds that we brought together at the beginning of the call, and I know I'm still feeling thankful for the autumn, and just invite you to tune in with what it was that you shared then and see if you can still find that gratitude. And, you know, it's from that place, from that shared space of thankfulness that will separate the hearts and minds and send everyone on our way. So thanks, everyone, and we will talk to you later. Okay, bye-bye.